about to hear my conversation with Dustin Reed, our chief fixed income strategist. We talk all about the recent inflation print out of the U.S., Bank of Canada, and how they are expected to react and what this means for fixed income markets. I hope you enjoy. This podcast is for informational purposes only. Information relating to investment approaches or individual investments should not be construed as advice or endorsement. Listeners should seek professional advice for their situation. Welcome to The Market Exchange, a podcast from Mackenzie Investments. My name is Matthew Schnurr, and I'm delighted to be back with my regular guest, Dustin Reed. Dustin is our chief fixed income strategist. Dustin, welcome back.
Hey, Matt. Thanks very much for having me back on the show.
We couldn't have picked better timing on the day to record this. We're recording on April 11th, just on the heels of a very hot CPI print in the U.S. Dustin, what did you make of that?
Yeah, it is fortuitous timing for sure. So definitely a slightly hotter than expected print on the U.S. side, particularly on core. We're really starting to split hairs on some of these releases here, which we've seen for a lot of the for a lot of this year, and even like the past, maybe the back part of 2023, and by that I mean 5 or 6 or 7 basis points upside surprise on core CPI is causing significant moves in the market. We saw core CPI round up to 0.4 to 2 decimal places. I think it was 0.35, and to 3 decimal places, I think it was 0.359 or there around. But consensus was around 0.3. So my point is 5 or 6 basis points higher, and you get a 20 basis point or maybe 18 basis point higher move in benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasuries, which is significant.
Wow. Yeah.
And there was more going on yesterday, to be fair, including an auction, a 10-year reopening auction that did go down very, very well, and that also pushed yields higher. So it wasn't all CPI. I don't want to say that it is, but clearly it got things going. Other things that were in the CPI, I think, were just disturbing to the market. The infamous super core, which Chair Powell has been focused on for a while, was 0.65 or 65 basis points. Services was in the 50s, right around 52 basis points or so. You saw some goods deflation reappear. Recall last month, you saw some goods inflation appear for the first time in a while. So goods deflation reappeared for the March data. This is the March data we got earlier this week, but minus 15 basis points. So kind of back to the trend, but you're seeing strong services appreciation or acceleration in prices or inflation, and super core, which seems to be somewhat of a Fed favorite, is also quite frothy. So the market did not take that very well, no surprise. And like I said, you saw yields trade significantly higher. I mean, we've seen some very interesting price action in the last week and change. As you said, we're reporting here kind of the morning of the 11th. But last week, in early April, market was very focused on this 4.33, 4.35 neighborhood in U.S. 10s. We got a couple closes to 1 or 2 or 3 basis points below there. super close, very, very close on Tuesday and Wednesday. And then after the NFP data on Friday, which was a decent beat, in terms of upside surprise, you saw some technical levels break. I think you saw some systematic and other types of accounts, the algorithmic accounts, come in and start selling and prices lower, yields higher on the break of 4.35. And then obviously you had yields drifting a little bit higher. And then the print yesterday on CPI, particularly core CPI, and that move extended significantly. So I think that's very interesting and important. There are, I think, implications not only for fixed income, but across asset classes as well. But from a CPI perspective, I think that's what we got. I think maybe just to finish off the question, a lot of people, including myself, looking at the January data, is it seasonal? Is it temporary? Is it a seasonal adjustment issue? Is it a one-off factor? What's going on? And Fed's been using this kind of bump in the road language. And so we got the January data and it looked a little odd, but it's January. So, okay, we're going to maybe give it a bit of a pass. Then February, a little bit hotter than expected, but it was different drivers. Okay, so maybe it's a bit of a pass. And now March data has come in. And I think, you know, you could discount 1 month data, 1 month's worth of data.
Sure.
You can discount somewhat 2 months worth of data. Once you start to get to 3 months of data, you have to at least reasonably ask yourself or have the conversation, is this actually the trend? And was the second half of 2023 when we saw inflation slowing materially, was that the actual outlier? And I think there are a lot of people that are reassessing their views around exactly that question. And is, you know, said a different way, is inflation structurally here to stay at a higher level? Is it sticky? And I think that's, you know, that's why we've seen a lot of people basically answer that question with, you know, price discovery in the market in the last 24 hours. And I think, you know, I think you have the answer in a way. So it was a significant event from a macro perspective. And it's something that, I mean, obviously we're spending a lot of time thinking about. I'm spending a lot of time thinking about, obviously the market's also doing the same.
That's great, Dustin. I think the natural next question is, how does this impact the Fed?
You
talked a lot about the 10 years moving. Curious what market action has been on the more short end of the curve. And obviously, with rate cuts being expected sometime in the summer-ish by the majority, at least before yesterday, have those changed? And what do you think the Fed can actually do?
It's a great question. I think so a couple of ways, maybe market pricing for the Fed first. So you've seen the market reprice, not a surprise, on the back of this, as well as kind of the train of data that we've been having, obviously generally hotter than expected across whether it's prices or the activity data or the labor market data. So we are below two cuts now for calendar 24, i.e. below 50 basis points for the rest of 24. I think earlier this week or going into the release, that number was probably in the high 60s, maybe 66, 68 basis points. Of course, in January, that number was well above 100,
right?
Maybe even 150 basis points, depending where you put the pin in it. So it's been a significant repricing over the last 3 months, and that's been very much the story and the global thematic up from the macro side for Q1. Obviously, we're just kind of on some of the early days of Q2. So that's been significant. I think June is challenging here. I think last time I looked, which was earlier this morning, June was pricing, or at least the market was pricing 4 basis points for June. So there's still a little bit left. And there's obviously a May meeting to get through before the June meeting. But it does look, it's looking more challenging for June. So we're starting to think about our Fed view here. We've not heard from Powell. And I think that is before people go making big changes and, you know, whether that's assumptions or views or portfolio changes, I think the Powell doctrine here is important, and we won't really have him, I don't think, for a bit in terms of what he's thinking. But, you know, Powell has clearly shifted, particularly, we've talked about it a bunch on these podcasts, that the December FOMC meeting, a press conference, where he came out exceptionally dovish and seemed to be talking a book that maybe was not the Fed view or the median Fed view, but maybe more his view. And I still ascribe to that, although maybe yesterday changed it for him as well. But if Powell is still quite dovish versus kind of the centrist consensus, then that is significant because he could still push through one or two cuts, maybe now, given how market pricing has changed, before the market is now anticipating. And that would obviously be very significant, not only for fixed income, of course, but for all asset classes. So, I mean, it's cheating a little bit, but I want to hear from him before I make big decisions. But clearly, there is a risk that there's going to be less this year, and it's higher for longer from the Fed. I mean, I do think that real rates are probably still too high for most of the Fed's models.
Sure.
And there are clearly cracks appearing in the labor market. You maybe have to look a little closer beyond the regular headlines. But as we've discussed, I think on these podcasts before, you know, you look at the beverage ratio, which is coming better in balance, when you look at the quits rate, which has come off significantly, when you look at the hiring rate, which has come off significantly, and both of those last two, not only for overall, but for private, for sure, would suggest that. And a lot of jobs that have been getting, the percentage of jobs that are happening in the U.S. are clearly skewed heavily towards government jobs, public jobs, more so than I would think should be for for open capitalistic economy.
Right.
So there are some cracks there. And there are some people on the Fed that are going to focus on that. But at the same time, does Powell really want to have an 8-4 or a 9-3 vote as the first easing of the cycle? That he probably does not. So you'll need some help with the data, and clearly the data is not being friendly towards that. So I haven't necessarily changed my, sitting here right now in real time, I have not changed my call for June per se, but clearly the risks are towards less rather than more.
I know counterfactuals are nearly impossible, particularly in this business, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Sure.
Does the narrative, does the Fed response, does all of this change if instead of coming in at 3.59, it comes in at 3.49 and rounds down to 3?
It's a great question. And that kind of goes to where I was a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a small number of basis points, and here we go. Probably not that little. I think that probably, you're absolutely right on the accounting that would have rounded down. But the market in the last 3, 4, or 5 months is now taking this to 2 and sometimes 3 decimal points, which is, a forecasting impossibility. Having done this in my previous life as an economist, you're lucky to get the first decimal point, right?
Yeah, right.
Never mind the second or the third.
Sure.
So, So I think it's a fair question for sure. I think we would have had a similar directional, and maybe not quite amplitude, but similar-ish reaction.
Okay.
It would have probably had to come closer to and that's why I'm explaining it now, and you probably noticed versus maybe even last year, I'll say 30 basis points or 35 basis points, i.e. 0.30 or 0.35, as opposed to 0.3 or 0.2 or 0.4, because the market is now looking at this from a at least a second decimal perspective. And so 0.349 and maybe rounding down, probably the market would have looked out to the third decimal point and probably not been overly thrilled with that. It would have still been a big enough miss, which is shocking, but in a way, but a big enough miss that we would probably have a similar, same direction and probably similar-ish amplitude.
Fair enough. I guess the other question that I have, so it seems like the Fed, to your point, the bias of risks are that they stay higher for longer.
Uh-huh.
As we look around the globe, and particularly sitting here in Canada, the risk profile seems pretty fundamentally different. I mean, the inflation numbers in Canada are a little bit more germane. Maybe you said some cracks in the labor market. Maybe ours are turning into fissures a little bit more. So what's your view on Bank of Canada? How much are they tied to the Fed, and what's their ability to act?
Yeah, absolutely. It's obviously, it's a great question. I think when we had the Bank of Canada meeting the same morning, within about an hour and change from the U.S. CPI data. So that was obviously, for those of us sitting in Canada and have a significant part of our books, particularly in fixed income, of Canadian paper, whether it's sovereign, corporate, or otherwise, made for a very busy day on Wednesday. So the bank kept rates at 5% as expected. I think very few, if any, had expected anything, and very little was priced in by the market. The bank did raise its neutral rate, or its estimate of neutral, I should say. And the bank, unlike the Fed, kind of looks at neutral from a range perspective. And so the bank had been at 2-3% in terms of the neutral range for policy, and it upped that by 25 basis points. So it's now 2.25-3.25, with the midpoint obviously being 2.75. So moving up by a quarter point. And that was well telegraphed. And generally, annually, every April, which is a forecast meeting for the bank, they take in the months before April, and then with the April NPR monetary policy report, they will publish an estimate of what they think the neutral rate is. And so we got that. And so it was not a surprise. And so people saying, this is significant for the bank. It's not insignificant, but it's definitely not a big driver, particularly, I think, for near-term policy. So I do think the bank yesterday set the table, or at least probably set the table for June. And we have been talking about the idea of the Bank of Canada and probably the ECB outdoving the Fed this year. And that was even before yesterday's CPI numbers. Kind of on this idea that even the Fed would probably do every other meeting cadence. Again, this is before yesterday's CPI number. But the Bank of Canada could go consecutive meetings for a while, as could the ECB. And so we think that, you know, again, and again, with yesterday's numbers, I would say that thesis or that idea probably carries more weight now than it did before. But I think the bank is setting up to ease rates in June. There were a few things in the statement that I thought were interesting. I probably have, just chatting with a few people on the street, and obviously this is what makes a market, I probably took the statement a little bit more dovish than the street did. I'm cherry picking a little bit from the statement. So I'll read off four things that were not in one sentence or back-to-back sentences, but just throughout the statement that I thought were very interesting. So one would be, and this is quoting from the bank, from the statement, financial conditions have eased. Second would be labor market conditions continue to ease. The third is wage pressures are moderating. And then the fourth is easing and price pressures are becoming more broad-based. And I look at those in totality. Again, this is not something that they said in one sentence or back-to-back sentences. I'm picking out pieces from the statement around the economy. And those are all quite, in my opinion, quite dovish statements. I mean, obviously, when you roll it all together, it sounds very dovish. So I wouldn't take it quite that far. But I do think that there's a few things there that clearly suggest that the bank is getting ready to start the easing cycle. And maybe that doesn't happen at the next meeting in June. I mean, maybe it does not. Maybe it's a July start, which will be the next forecast meeting for the bank, having just had one in April, so June will not, July will be. But regardless, it really does seem like the bank is getting ready to start easing rates. And so we like that idea from a policy perspective. We talk about markets maybe a bit in a minute, but from, you know, will the Bank of Canada outdove the Fed? Yes, we continue to believe so. And we have for a while. And Macklem's press conference, I thought, was interesting as well. The first journalist who asked the question, I believe, who had the first question at the press conference, asked a very pointed, direct question. It was June in play. And you could see that, I watched it live, Macklem definitely was trying to find the right language. And he did say, he basically started off with the answer, yes, literally, sent period, and then started to explain that. But you know, June is definitely in the realm of possibility, was kind of the takeaway. And so I think that's very possible. And I think that's definitely continuing to be our base case here. To the second kind of part of your question around, you know, how important is the Fed with respect to this? You know, as I've said, and I should be consistent, the Fed policy is important for all central banks, I think, around the globe. But there is also some clear, at least in my opinion, and I don't think I'm alone, there's some clear economic outperformance in the U.S. that seems to be exceptional. And by exceptional, I mean exceptionalism or kind of standing alone, as opposed to most of the rest of the world. And so can you, at this point in the cycle, U.S. versus, I guess in this particular case, Canada, can you justify moving ahead of the Fed and maybe materially ahead of the Fed if the Fed doesn't show up until later this year, literally after the U.S. election? And I think you can justify that because the labor market here is clearly starting to fray. With the employment data that came out in the U.S., you also have the Canadian data at the same time. And the unemployment rate moved higher to 6.1%, which is not massive on the historical scale, but we're clearly well off the bottom, which is around 5%, right? So it's moved up 1.1 percentage points. When you look at where the U.S. is in terms of the cycle, at least just apples to apples, which is maybe not a perfect way to look at it, but just sure. Simply, clearly the U.S. side has not moved up as much. I mean, I think it's only moved up about 0.4 or 0.5 percentage points. So it's quite a bit It's quite a bit different. And we've talked about the household income side. Obviously, everyone's aware of the elephant in the room, which is the reset risk for mortgages the back half of 24 and in particular 25. And the bank's aware of that too. So I think you can justify the bank moving before and maybe multiple times before the Fed for this cycle, because the domestic data, and I didn't even really talk about the Canadian inflation data, but it's also moving back into line, seems to justify it. The one risk, I mean, there's probably more than one risk, but the one immediate risk here is clearly oil prices, which have moved higher in the last little bit. It's a very strong correlation, no surprises. Everybody knows who fills up their car at the gas station between prices at the pump and oil prices, and prices have gone up. And that is going to feed through immediately to headline CPI in Canada. But I do think the bank is a little more focused on core here, even though its main mandate is headline, but core, one of the core mandates, and there are many, we've talked about kind of the shell game that is happening with core CPI. But I do think that the bank might look through a bit of a temporary, or maybe the expected temporary blip in higher oil and gasoline prices. So I'm aware of that argument. I think it's a very fair argument, but the bank's putting so much emphasis on core, as it did yesterday, that I think it will look through that.
Interesting. Maybe we'll shift to how this could actually impact fixed income markets. What areas are particularly interesting for you, and how are you viewing them?
Yeah, for sure. This is we're really grinding this week. This is a tough week for fixed income. It's a tough week for markets. I mean, there's not a lot of places to hide. Maybe before kind of the fixed income side, maybe something just quick on cross asset, which I think is important. Over the last couple of weeks or so, we've seen volatility measures. So a lot of equity investors would be looking at the VIX, but there are equivalent measures for other asset classes as well. But we've seen volatility measures start to move higher. And then with the CPI print yesterday, we saw a significant move higher in what I would call cross asset volatility. And that's important because when volatility increases, a lot of institutional investors just mechanically, or from an accounting perspective, need to pare back risk. Why? Because if you're dealing in a presumably more volatile market environment and the swings are larger, whether they're higher or lower, but generally lower from a risk perspective, you don't want to have as much risk on the table, right? Kind of makes intuitive sense. And a lot of the institutional players will have models that will do exactly that. When volatility increases, it says, okay, we need to take the amount of risk that we have. A lot of people would use VAR models of volatility and risk, and that needs to come off the table. And I think a lot of people, no surprise, have been quite long of high-risk assets, particularly credit, right? Credit has been very, very tight. Spreads have been very tight. And equities have obviously done very, very well, not only this year, but also for a good chunk of last year. And I think one of the things I've been talking about internally here the last two or three weeks is this idea that volatility is so low, and admittedly it is very, very low from a historical perspective, but I think it's going to move higher in the second half of the year. And I was actually focused a little more on FX vol, but the more I've been thinking about it, I think it's actually more cross asset vol. But we may not have to wait for the second half of the year. It might be a second quarter event, and I think we might be at the beginnings of it. So I think that is very important for investors to keep in mind. As volatility increases, some of the institutional investors might pare back their risk. And that can obviously have a cascading impact or effect on markets. From a rates perspective, again, we've clearly seen a big back up in yields higher. We saw two-year notes in the U.S. trade 5% in the last 24 hours. And we've reached 4.55 on 10-year yields in the U.S. And Canadian yields, a little bit smaller beta, given kind of what I was saying also on the Bank of Canada side. But, Canada is not, the Canadian curve is not going to be a panacea, be on its own, with the U.S. yields moving that significantly higher. They're very, very unlikely to be a complete directional divergence between Canada and the U.S. It's only a question of relative value. But I, you know, the view on the team for a long time, I think, has been, again, Canada will probably outdub the Fed, however that looks for 2024. And we generally like being a lot longer Canadian duration or longer the Canadian curve, so to speak, versus the U.S. And I think yesterday, given both of those events, U.S. CPI and BOC, probably helps to underscore our view. I would also say one thing in terms of real yields and nominal yields. And, you know, we've been a pretty big proponent of TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, which are obviously inflation-linked bonds in the U.S. It's pretty liquid, pretty deep market. A good chunk of last year, 2023, we're generally, when we wanted duration, we would often buy what we would call real yield duration in the U.S. or TIPS, as opposed to nominal bonds or the regular cash bonds. And then we kind of moved away from that a little bit, thinking that January, and I was very much part of this discussion, but January might have been a bit of a one-off, and then February kind of got me a little bit skittish. And over the last few weeks, we've been kind of moving back to this thematic that we had for a good chunk of 23, where particularly in the U.S., like, if you want to own duration, we want to own real duration over nominal duration, because we think that the inflation looks a little bit stickier, a little bit more structural. And I mean, it may be a negative overall for both real and nominal, but I think in this environment, you're probably going to have a better outcome being long the real yields versus nominal yields, because at least you're getting paid back the inflation side. And again, the market is very, very liquid and very, very deep. It's, you know, it's a market that we're quite comfortable being in. So I think that's kind of the setup here. But as I was saying to a few people, Q2 is going to be very, very interesting on a number of fronts. You know, both you and I talked about it with Matt Orbach from Morgan Stanley on the other podcast around the cash injections, around tax season in the U.S. Macro data is going to be very whippy. I think maybe I was not early enough on the volatility call, thinking it was a second half event, maybe a second quarter event. So this is going to be really interesting tactical trading macro environment, really, active in terms of actively managing the portfolio. These are great markets to trade. They are dangerous markets to trade, but they are great markets to trade if you can kind of get ahead of the trend. So it's going to be a very, very interesting Q2 show.
Well, Dustin, thanks for that context. Sort of puts everything in perspective. Look forward to our next one. It seems like there'll be no shortage of things to talk about.
Definitely, definitely. Same here. Thanks very much for having me on.
The content of this podcast, including facts, views, opinions, and recommendations, is not to be used or construed as investment advice and is not an offer or an invitation to buy or sell any security. The content of this podcast should not be relied upon for any purposes, and Mackenzie Financial Corporation is not responsible for any reliance upon it. This podcast includes forward-looking information that reflects our current expectations or forecasts of future events. Forward-looking information is subject to risks, uncertainties, and assumptions that could cause actual results to differ materially from those expressed herein. Our views are subject to change based on market conditions. Commissions, trailing commissions, management fees, and expenses may be associated with mutual fund investments. Please read the fund facts and prospectus before investing. The indicated rates of returns are historical annual compounded total returns, including changes to unit values and reinvestment of all dividends or distributions, and does not take into account sales, redemptions, distribution, or optional charges or income taxes payable by any security holder that would have reduced returns.